I guess I'm going to start with Scotty Barnes because I know you were very high on him. It's been well documented at this point that, you know, he played with your son at Florida State and you would have watched him a ton and you liked him as this number two player in the draft. Like I've seen you put those out there. I do wonder like how he compares in terms of your knowledge of a player compared to some other guys during this time of year, like having that behind the scenes look, how, if at all, it's impacted the way that you feel about him as a prospect.
Actually, that's a great question, but you know, I'm an old man now. I'm going to be 57 in February. I've been coaching since 1987. I'm fortunate enough to have a fair number of friends that coach in college. So getting inside looks on players isn't hard. Mm-hmm. As an example, last year after I watched a ton of tape on James Weissman, I called a friend of mine who coached James Weissman at Memphis. And I don't normally talk to people before I make my evaluation. I like to make my evaluation, and then if they poke holes in it, then I got to go back to the tape. So in the case of Weissman, that didn't happen at all. The coaches thought he would be incredible. So, yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of inside baseball maybe because my son, you know, had played and practiced with him every day. But honestly, if anyone has seen any tape on Scotty to include the Chicago pre-draft camp where he was the most magnetic person on the court and yet he wasn't even playing, you would know that there's nothing I gleaned from – first of all, you know, mostly the stuff my son would tell me, I'll keep that private. I do talk to the coaches too. But there's nothing that I think I heard that I had to witness just watching games. So I can promise you this. The Toronto Raptors didn't draft him because David Thorpe's son played on the team with Scotty. They saw the same things I saw. And quite frankly, I think they're lucky as heck that the teams drafting ahead of them didn't draft him because I think they got one of the two top players in the draft.
Yeah, and I know your history with Masai Ujiri, and so I did have a thought of, man, I wonder if Coach Thorpe influenced this pick. I wondered if you, having him that high, if that he respects your basketball acumen to the point where he was like, guys, we got to reevaluate this, and like this is what is going to be maybe the tipping point over Suggs. So you mentioned something there that I think is really why I have two questions about Barnes, and like I have two thoughts on him in general. One is that he's, like you said, the first thing that pops with him is how much people talk about the man, the kid. The fact that he is willing to sacrifice for the team, his love of basketball, his personality. And I look at that and I say, around the draft, we always fall in love with that guy, right? The team first guy, the we guy. But when it really comes down to, you know, crunch time, this is a league where what you want is the killers. And so at the draft, it's we want the team guys. And then in the NBA finals, it's what Giannis needs is more of a killer instinct. Is what we need to see here is killer instinct, killer instinct, killer instinct. Do you think that that is going to be a challenge in his development? Is going from a guy who's a playmaker, a bench guy, a team guy, to someone who's a lottery pick, a number four guy that eventually at his age, 20 years old, I think that you do get expected to be one of those guys that you turn late to in a game and say, hey, we need a bucket, we need a play.
So I don't think it'll be a problem at all. Not remotely. First of all, he only was a bench guy this year because he got slightly hurt early in the season, and the team went on a win streak at that point. They were doing fine before, but doing better after. And he just didn't want to break up the rhythm and basically told Coach Hamilton, I'm guessing, like, I'm okay to come off the bench. He certainly acted like he was okay coming off the bench. And it probably helped that he was Florida State's sixth man this year. The year before, that position was held by Patrick Williams, who went number four to the Bulls. And the year before that, a young man named Kabengele, who was drafted in the first round by the Clippers. So they've had now three straight six men of the year for the ACC, also go in the first round, two in the top five. So I don't think these guys at Florida State are worried anymore, but oh my goodness, I have to start if I want to get drafted high. So here's probably the best way I can explain him in terms of the edge that people probably don't realize he has until you've seen him play. He is happy to dunk on your head and look you right in the eye when he does it. And what I mean by that is literally as he drives down the court and he's got you measured, he doesn't even look at the rim. He stares at you and then dunks on you to the point where I told my son during the year, That needs to stop when he gets to the NBA or he's going to get lit up and hurt. Like, you can't do that in the NBA. And he said, oh, he's hurt it up. He knows. So some of the people have told him that too. This is not a guy that's Mr. Nice Guy on the court. He wants to kick your ass. So that you don't win as much as he's won at wherever he's gone. Absent that, now that is not to suggest he doesn't have to learn to be much more assertive. I think he does. Just like Ben Simmons has learned to be more assertive. Just like Giannis, even after two MVPs this year, had to change the way he played and be more focused on scoring in the paint, on screen and rolls and hard cuts and offensive rebounds, and not try to prove he could play like Kevin Durant because he can't. Not and win a championship. Basketball is all about evolving. So I think it's going to be hard to get him to be assertive to the level that I think he needs to have a chance to be like first team all league. But it's hard for everyone has it hard to get there except for maybe like LeBron. Like even Durant had to go three seasons before his team was actually better when he was on the court than what they were when he was off it. It's a hard game anyway, as your coaching staff knows, and I'm sure Scotty will soon learn, but the kid wants to be amazing. So he's going to have to realize he's going to have to buckle down and buckle up and assert himself all the time, just like Siakam kind of learned how to do and Ben Fleet learned how to do. And I remember Kyle Lowry wasn't any kind of offensive player, certainly not the one he is now. So, Yeah, he's going to have that same kind of arc every other player has to go through.
So, yeah, that's the other part of it is, and this is part two, because the shooting is the thing that everyone discusses, is whether he has to have an overhaul with his mechanics. I heard you with your colleague, Henry Abbott, talking about how you kind of liked his mid-range game, or you think that it's being slept on a little bit, which I think is really interesting, especially when we're talking about the idea that he'd have to overhaul everything. But it's that this is something I talk about with a friend all the time, is like, And because we've done it with Pascal Siakam and we've done it with OG Anunoby, is because there is an outlier like Kawhi Leonard, and I know that there are others, but him specifically, where we look at them and say, well, this guy developed offense at the NBA level, and say, well, it's attainable. But how difficult it is to ask guys to learn this in the NBA, to all of a sudden say to Scottie Barnes, who was not a 1A scorer in college or in high school, to say, okay, man, like, now what we really need to do is to have you develop your scoring and your jump shot and your assertiveness at the level where you are going to be defended by the best players on the planet and have the highest demand out of any league on the planet. Like, what do you make of just, I guess, that idea of, I don't know what if it's like the ease in which we discuss it, but the ability to evolve as an offensive player in the NBA when you are raw and when you do have a jump shot that, I guess, I don't know where you land on what he needs to do with the jump shot, but you're the perfect guy to ask because you are a, developmental specialist.
So I think I can answer that in maybe a couple of different ways that'll make it real simple. First, I'll quote one of my favorite movies, The Matrix, where Morpheus, if you've seen the movie, Lawrence Fishburne, he says that when Neo suddenly is basically completely dominating the Matrix, this is before he stopped the bullets, and with the helicopters and everything else, and Morpheus says, there's a difference between knowing the path and walking the path. And I use that quote all the time. I've been covering the NBA now since 2007. So you see these players who at one point, like I said with Durant, was filling up the stat sheet, but his team was worse when he was on the court. And then when they suddenly realized, oh, I can dominate this game in a way that Morpheus dominated the Matrix, that's when it all happened. So I think you guys have one of the best coaches in the world, and I'm certain the staff, I don't know your staff as well, and I know it's changed some, but that's what they're going to be doing with him. He's good enough, in my opinion, to be that kind of player. The way Giannis, for example, controlled the finals by not being a primary ball handler. That wasn't a pretty, and I wrote about this, that was a pretty incredible time where we had a player for the first time, really since Shaq, and maybe Tim Duncan as well when he was young, completely dominated the game and didn't need the ball in his hands all the time on the perimeter. But it took a long time for Giannis to learn that and already had won three MVPs and hadn't learned it. So I think it's something that they're going to slowly develop with him. He does have an ability as a ball handler passer that allows him to do things offensively that very few players in this draft can do. He's very good in transition. I do think you saw the final. You saw Devin Booker and Chris Paul raining down, 14-foot jumpers when I called the second box, which is the higher part of the paint. Part of that was because Milwaukee didn't let them shoot threes as easily, and the other part is Phoenix knew they could really be good at that. Kawhi Leonard's probably the best in the league, one of the best in the league anyway. I think Scottie can do that because you can't get to his shot. He can get the ball pretty high above his head. He's super tall and long to begin with. His feel for the game. So when you say raw, he's raw as a shooter. He's not raw as a basketball player, I promise you. He's a very high IQ player for someone who's played 1 year of college in a COVID-stricken, restricted season, right? His instincts on defense, along with, I thought, Mobley and Keon Johnson were the best I saw on tape. Raekwon Gray, a teammate of his who went to Brooklyn, has very good instincts too, more on the ball. I thought Scottie's instincts off the ball are excellent, as well as on the ball. His shooting, I think it's problematic, to be honest. I think of all the different, I've coached thousands and thousands of players, the hardest guys for me to help as a shooter were people who had troubles like Scottie does with his length and long fingers, big hands, long arms, but absolutely changeable. And again, I think you guys have the best head coach, probably the best in the league, who understands player development, I think, more than most. A lot of coaches don't really get it. He does. So I think that they'll address that. I also think that he's already probably been working on it. From what I've talked to some people, just in passing, including my son, who follows him on Instagram. I don't follow him on Instagram. And my son said, and my son knows a little bit about shooting, I would think also, considering what he's been doing his whole life with me. And he said, he already looked so much better, Dad. So the best thing I can say about him as a player, and this can't happen after the draft, and this goes to a shooting thing. Some of my pros in town right now met my son for the first time this last weekend when he just came back from school this last week. And they said, what do you think of Scottie? And his first response was, he's one of the best human beings I've ever met. Now, my son's met 80 NBA players in my gym. Right, they've come. Messiah visited my son when he was in his crib 20 years ago. He's been around NBA people his whole life. For him to say that about Scottie, I did not know he felt that way, tells me so much. My son wouldn't say that if he was lazy or casual about detail. That's part of what I think he's saying is this guy is going to do everything right. He's a coach pleaser. He's a people pleaser. But he's also hungry to be great. So that's why I ran him number two. I think in terms of his floor is already going to be very high because at the very least he can be a little lesser Draymond Green, be on the All-NBA defensive team, be a solid offensive player. To me, that's his floor, guys. His ceiling is, I wouldn't say MVP unless he can really learn to score, which is possible, but he can still be All-NBA first or second team, which not many guys in this draft, I think, have that potential.
Yeah, I have seen a lot of the Draymond comparisons, and I kept thinking to myself, listen, if the Raptors drafted Draymond Green, or at least nice Draymond Green at number four, I think that you're probably going to end up being pretty happy with that. I am curious about what you just think about the state of player development and like how we look at these guys differently now versus then, because part of the thing that I guess I was mulling over when it comes to Scottie Barnes is, are we sure that like playmaker types are as valuable? And are we sure that playing these minutes is as important? Like over the last couple of years with international basketball, right? We've seen guys that have turned down the opportunity to do so, that they've said, you know what? I don't want to do that. I'm going to focus on my individual skills. I'm going to focus on my player developmental coach. And this happens a lot up here in Canada, especially where we haven't had the best turnout for the international team. And my contention has always been, well, why aren't these guys going? Because these are meaningful reps. You get to play the game last night against Ricky Rubio and a Spanish team that are really pushing you and asking you to be at your best in a real competitive game versus working out with your coach constantly where it's the same drills over and over and maybe it's the same people that are in the gym over and over and you get these these just similar looks over and over again and you're not developing these other things. And I just think about a guy like Barnes where it's, is it a good thing that he gets to go and he gets to play all these minutes and he does have that feel for the game? Or is it just more valuable that you have those traits that like everybody in the NBA seems to be looking for now. Like there is less variety with the players in the game now. And so I worry about guys like him where the attributes are playmaking and feel when some of that does feel like it's being phased out of the game right now.
Oh, I would take the exact opposite approach, actually. So I say this with all degree of humility because it doesn't really have any meaning, but a lot of my people here would call me the godfather of player development because I was doing it professionally in 1993, and people think I was the only one in the country doing it. So and maybe the world, there was no internet back then, at least none of us had any.
Listen,
so
I think you should really wear that moniker. I think that we are, like, that is the moniker that you have. We can all agree. Great. No one's going to be upset. And if they are, they can come speak to you about it personally.
I wish I had the vision of maybe creating a franchise for it, whatever. And then I would have told you that I would have failed miserably because what I think now every community has 20 player development guys all over America, if not the world. I have a guy from Israel working with me right now as an intern who does the same thing in Tel Aviv. We messed up. I messed up. I failed to get people to understand that it's not about skill development. It's about game development, which skill is a part of. And so in Scotty's case, as an example, he needs some skill development. His game development's unbelievable for his age. What I try to do with my professional players, and including all the way down to my son, you know, his whole life, is teach you guys how to win basketball games. Skills are a part of that, but so is understanding how to play. If you watch Team USA, which I did at 4:30 this morning, because I decided to go to sleep at midnight and get up at 4:30 to watch, our guys played gorgeous basketball and did today. We didn't shoot great in the first half, but the way we moved, the way we attacked the zone, the way we attacked a short corner and then kick out later in the game against Spain, these guys are just brilliant IQ basketball players. Scotty's going to play for Team USA, guys. He's already been playing for Team USA. I think he's won 3 medals on the younger age groups. He is going to be one of those guys that plays in these games because the international game demands a two-way player for the most part, unless you have really, really special skill in one area. Whereas Zach LaVine, I think, is still learning how to play the game, but his skills are extraordinary. I think we're better off with guys that really understand how to play and then also develop their skills. So I think he's got a big advantage with that. He's got work to do. He's got to improve his ball handling. He's got to improve his shooting. He's got to improve his finishing, his mid-range game. Those are all very obvious things to get better at. But a lot of players, my point is a lot of those players check those boxes, but then when you put them in the game and their team does worse when they're on the court because they don't know how to use them and when to use them or how to pass to other people when the crowd comes and takes away your angles. That's where I think unselfishness, Larry Bird and Magic Johnson are still the standard bearers for how the game is supposed to be played. And those guys won a lot of games because of it. They weren't just talented and tall. They developed their skills in time. Certainly Magic and Bird both got much better. Magic as the shooter, Bird as the ball handler. But their understanding of how to play and win is exactly what guys I think like Scotty Barnes has now that our league really, really needs.